The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Welcome back. I enjoyed the walk. I don't know about you guys. I enjoy this topic of tranquility, the calm. It's just nice to feel the calm and peace. Even walking up and down the block on the streets, just having the sense of calm, it's very supportive. And I'll say more about that later. But first, I wanted to set the context for this fifth of the seven factors of awakening that we are practicing together today. So, many of you have come to previous seven-factor day-longs, and I see a couple of new faces. I think a couple of people are new. Me, yeah, great. So, I'll say just a few words of context to put this into context, and it will be a review for other people too. You've heard this before, but just to remind you of it, and that is that. The seven factors of awakening, both as we practice more and more, these seven factors become more available, they become more present, both in our practice on the cushion with eyes closed, and also they become more available to us in our daily life. They become more accessible in daily life. So as you practice more, the seven factors become more available. And then as the seven factors become more and more pronounced and available and balanced, both in your practice and in your daily life, that leads to more freedom, more awakening, which is the quote-unquote goal of this practice. In fact, it is said in the suttas, the Buddha says, just as a river inclines and flows towards the ocean, so the awakening factors incline towards nibbana, towards awakening. So there's just no other direction to go when these are cultivated than more freedom, than more peace, than nibbana, awakening. So that's the good news. The other thing I wanted to remind you of is that these seven factors are not the factors that are esoteric and out there and we just try to create them, but actually these are factors, are states of mind and qualities that we're already familiar with. For example, this morning as we discussed peace and tranquility, like being by a tranquil lake, oh, that's an experience we all have. We know what being peaceful or being tranquil feels like. It's not so foreign. So that's the wonderful thing, that these factors are part of our repertoire of human experience. And by actually cultivating them more, by intentionally cultivating them, they can become more and more present and more accessible instead of just a matter of grace that now and then we'll experience them. No, they can actually become more accessible much more easily and arise much more easily on their own in our daily life when we least expect them. They visit us a lot more frequently and become source of joyous surprises. You wake up in the morning and, oh, there is calm, there is peace, or it just visits you because your mind knows how to go there more readily, more easily. So just to review the seven factors and their relationship and how this particular factor of tranquility, pasadi, calm, fits in to the other ones. What's the role of this one? Why is it here? What's its purpose? So to remind you, of the list, the first one is mindfulness, is sati. So Being aware, being mindful, having this clarity of awareness, mindfulness. So there are different ways to think about the order of the seven. One is that one can lead to the other. So I'll go through the seven, sharing with you how one leads to the other. And you've heard this before, so this is a review for most of you. So when you're mindful, when you bring attention, awareness to what is happening, that act of mindfulness, that naturally brings out the second factor, which is this, which is curiosity or investigation. When you bring awareness, you see more details and you become more curious. You become more interested. More interested, that's another good word. You become more interested in the phenomena that you are observing. So the first one, mindfulness, sati. The second one, investigation, or dhamma vichaya in Pali. So when mindfulness and curiosity or interest are present, that naturally brings out the third factor of awakening, which is energy, virya, or determination, or engagement. You become engaged. And just think about your own life when you're doing something that you love, you're attending to it, say you're doing a hobby that you love. Maybe it's solving puzzles. You're bringing awareness to it. There's interest, and then that interest brings up more engagement, more energy. Like you maybe even forget to eat. You forget what time it is. It becomes so engaged. It brings up energy. Maybe you won't go to bed. You pass your bedtime. You stay up doing what you love. So it brings up energy. Virya. Also translated as effort. It brings in natural, non-efforting effort. Naturally brings it in. And when these are present, naturally what the next factor arises, which is the factor of joy, piti, which we discussed and explored last time, which is the sense of enjoyment and delight comes in. Like you're enjoying, you're in the midst of it, you're engaged, you're interested, you're curious. It's just like it's all flowing, right? It's all flowing. There's a sense of piti, that joy, that delight comes up. So at the very beginning, before we started the recording, Noel asked, I think you asked something about what was your question? Something about...
Well, you just were so serene and happy to be serene, and I want to know what if you're not.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, so it was serenity, and I was actually at the beginning I was talking about how happy I was that the topic is, you know, calm and serene, and you said, what's not? And I said, well, last time we explored joy, and joy has more bubbliness to it, has more excitement, has more a little bubbliness. So what happens in this practice, the fourth factor, joy, when that arises, for example, when you're practicing on the cushion and there's a sense of joy and delight and you're just loving and falling in love with what you're doing, that bubbliness of joy, when it evens out, when it becomes spreads and evens out, that leads to calm. That energy of joy becomes calm, becomes tranquility. Because your heart is fed. Your heart is fed with joy and enjoyment. And there's a sense of ease. You see how the two are related to each other, right? There is a delight, there is a joy that, joy is fun for a while, but after a while it's hard to sustain. It's like sometimes it can feel like too much bubbliness. I don't know if you've experienced that. But calm and peace, it's sustainable. It evens out into, so joy, this fourth factor, evens out, can even out into the sense of calm, which is very supportive. And the sense of calm, peace, then when the mind is really content and satisfied and really peaceful, then the mind becomes like a happy purring cat that just kind of like, roar, like really happy in the sun. And that leads to the next factor, which is the sixth factor, which is usually translated as concentration, but I like to translate it as unification of mind. The mind becomes unified. That is samadhi, the practice of samatha, which leads to the state of samadhi. The mind becomes unified and quote-unquote concentrated and just calm and very still. The mind becomes very still, stable, unmovable, which is a beautiful, beautiful experience state of mind. And with that, the next factor, which is really the jewel of Buddhist practice, is thought of to be equanimity, upekkha. Equanimity is the seventh factor. It's just equipoise, stability, ease with whatever is arising, neither falling into nor pulling away. It's just being with whatever there is, with spaciousness, ease, complete stability. Welcome back, Bev. Complete stability. So this is one way to think about all the seven factors leading to one another. And to say that in practice, you may experience them not sequentially. One may not lead to another. You can experience them completely out of order, which is fine too. And sometimes one factor might be stronger than another one. Sometimes joy might be stronger. Sometimes interest and curiosity might be a lot more apparent. But ideally, at some point, they will become all balanced. They become, especially if you're sitting on the cushion and practicing and meditating, the moments of insight and the moments of when one sees things clearly, these seven factors are present and balanced, which is a wonderful, wonderful state. So it's like an orchestra, you know. It's there's a little bit of bassoon, a little bit of violin, and a little viola. It's like here, there, and at some point that they're all singing and they're all in rhythm and completely together. It's not one of them is not absent. They're all there. And ta-da! And those are the moments that can support and really lead to moments, mini moments of awakening and freedom and seeing and insight, seeing things differently. Another way to see how the seven are organized and how the fifth one, tranquility, really fits within the seven is what is called the calming factors and the energizing, thank you. The energizing factors. I should forget that word. I don't know why. The energy. That's it. I'm totally calm today. Can you pick it up? I'm really digging this factor. So, the calming factors and the energizing factors. So three are calming, and three are energizing. And mindfulness is in the middle. Mindfulness is the balancing factor. Okay. So the three calming factors are, you want to guess? Tranquility is one of them, yes. What else? Equanimity, exactly. No, joy is on the other side, yeah. No? Concentration, yeah. Because concentration is a unification of mind. That's also calming. That calms the mind, okay. So to repeat, the three calming factors are, surprise, surprise, tranquility, pasadi, which we're experiencing, practicing with today. There is samadhi, unification of mind, concentration, which also calms the mind, soothes the mind, stabilizes the mind, and equanimity, which is a calming. It's kind of a sense of stabilizing. Okay. All right, now let's go to the energizing, the kind of bubbly side. The bubbly side, so energizing. What are the factors, the energizing factors, do you think?
Joy.
Joy, yes. What else?
Energy,
exactly. Energy and investigation both. Yeah, those are all, they all bring more energy into the practice. And the only one left is mindfulness, which is the balancing factor. So if you think of a seesaw, mindfulness balances the energizing factors with the calming factors. So this is important. I'll get to you in a moment. So this is really, really important. Why? Because often these factors in our practice are present and can kind of get out of whack. So if you find you're becoming a little too, for example, you're sitting, you're practicing, meditating, and you're becoming too agitated, there's just too much agitation. It might be that there's too much energy, too much trying, too much effort. Or it could be that there is just too much investigation. Like, some investigation is great, but if it's too much, the mind can get riled up. It's just like, oh, what's this? What's this? What's this? What's this? Like, okay, just like, maybe, what's this? Pause, what's this, right? So if you realize the mind is too agitated, then what you do is you bring in, you cultivate, you actively bring in some of the calming factors to balance your practice. So you can bring in a little more tranquility, like a little more calm, okay? Or equanimity, or try to stay with one object, to cultivate samadhi, the calm, the mind unifying and settling on one object alone instead of moving about, okay? The opposite can also happen. If you find your mind kind of getting sleepy, or your mind is sinking, or it's kind of like, you're getting too sleepy. Sometimes, actually, there are different times, but sometimes if you're not sleep deprived, you've had enough sleep, everything is fine, there's no reason for you to be sleepy, but you still feel like you're really sleepy. In fact, that I'll tell you a personal story that happened to me years ago. I was on a meditation retreat, and it was maybe the third day or something, so I'd had enough rest the first couple of days, and then I found that I was too relaxed. I couldn't stay awake. I was just like, wow, it's totally chill. I realized, wow, this is it. This is the factor of tranquility. I have too much of it. Okay, I think I need to bring in more of the factor. I mean, it was delicious. The tranquility was just delicious, but not very conducive to practice if you have too much tranquility and not enough investigation and energy and joy. So that was really fun to experience. It kind of was showing up as, like almost sleepiness, like tranquility to the point of being so calm that the mind just wanted to just chill, but needed to be balanced with the other factors. So you can see that in your own practice and see what is needed. More salt, more sugar, more saffron. Always, that's right. In Persian cooking, always. Anyway, so this is another way to think of the balancing of the factors and how the factor of tranquility, pasadi, relaxation, calm, really fits in with the other ones. So you've had your hands up for a while. Do you want to grab that?
So what are the qualities that differentiate equanimity from tranquility, calmness, or peacefulness? So what makes them...
What's the difference between the two? Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah. So this will become more fully answered, of course, when in 2 months when you'll come for equanimity and we'll explore equanimity together. And you'll feel for yourself, because right now the answer I'll give will be kind of heady, right? But you'll feel for yourself, oh yeah, these two feel really different. They feel really different. So tranquility also, is really the calm, this peacefulness, it's the calm, it's the relaxation of body and mind, right? It's a quality of relaxation. Okay. Equanimity is a state of equipoise, where the mind is really balanced, and when, say, something comes up, the reaction is neither falling into it, like, I want this, nor is it pushing it away. So it's a sense of balance. So it feels very different. It's this sense of spacious balance of being what is, an openness to what is, which feels different qualitatively from that relaxation of body and mind. So, any other questions about what I shared before I move on? Yes, and ta-da! You can hand it one person to the next. There you go.
I understand.
I think it's off. Could you?
Got it. All right. I understand the idea of noticing something like, oh, this is joy, or, oh, look it, this is calm.
Yeah.
Strengthens that pathway.
Yeah.
But I've also been taught that to notice everything, you know, to, like, well, this is anger.
Mm-hmm.
And I notice a lot of those negative spaces, mm-hmm. or just, I don't want to judge them, just, oh, this feels like envy.
Mm-hmm.
And, so am I strengthening those neurons and pathways by just saying, that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is.
Right.
Where, I don't get a lot of, whoa, this is joy.
Right.
You know, I don't get a lot to notice on, in the pathways.
Yeah.
But I get a lot is like not what you're listing in the pathways.
Sure. That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. So that's a really good question. So the short answer is no. You're not strengthening the unwholesome by noticing them. And in fact, it is the practice to notice everything, to notice both the unwholesome and the wholesome through mindfulness, to be very, very clear about them. So basically, when you are noticing the anger, that's also actually brings up, you get to see what it feels like. And because with the unwholesome, see, this is what's interesting, and this is the subtle level, because when you're noticing anger and, let's say, ill will, all of those,
agitation.
Right? Agitation, exactly. All of the unwholesomenesses. Together with the noticing of that, there's a subtle noticing of the tightness, of the dukkha, of the unpleasantness, right?
Mm-hmm.
So by actually, when you bring attention to it, you're bringing attention to the whole guacamole, you're bringing attention to the whole thing, so that actually weakens the pathways. Like, that I see that. That doesn't feel so good. So that weakens it. But when you're bringing attention to joy, you're also subtly bringing attention, even though that's not, we're not saying that, but actually that's what's happening in your mind. The attention is coming to both the quality of joy and how it feels, and the nourishing aspects of it, the pleasant aspects of it, the wholesome natures of it, and the mind's like, oh, this is good. I want more of this. It's kind of like, it's a reward system that's inherently built in when you notice the wholesome qualities, and there is a a lack of reward system that's inherently built in by noticing. So yes, please notice everything. And in fact, that is part of the instructions in the Satipatthana Sutta, in the Four Foundations of Mindfulness Sutta. The first foundation, body; second foundation, vedana, feeling tones; third foundation, mind; fourth foundation, dhammas, mental phenomena. So in the fourth foundation, there are a lot of instructions, and I'll get to that. There are instructions about how to work with the seven factors. You notice them. And how to work with the hindrances. You notice them.
Mm-hmm.
So either way, you bring mindfulness to it. You notice them.
One of my problems is, like, you know, I notice the agitation, but uh-huh. more than that, I notice the story mm-hmm. around the agitation. Mm-hmm. And it's hard for me to sever the story that I've heard too much of and just, that, sink into just the agitation.
Yeah, yeah. And so to me, what that sounds like is a practice, because you know up here, right? You know that is the practice, right? And it's a matter of the mind kind of seeing it, doing it, like, okay, let go of the story. Oh, I don't want to. Okay, not really, sweetie, please let go of the story this time. Let me just do it once. The story will still be there. I can pick it up in 5 minutes. But what if I let it go now and sink in deeply? So you just have to kind of find your own way with your own mind to let it go for just a little bit, to sit with the feeling. Yeah. Any other questions? Yeah, one more question before moving on.
This is in response to what you said, Noelle. So after last month and the joy.
Yeah.
There are a billion moments of joy going on every second in our life.
Mm.
And they're so habitual, we don't even notice them. And that the negative ones really are less frequent, but because of their turmoil, they seem more weighted, let's put it that way. So what I learned from last month,
yeah.
which was amazing, is yeah. that every moment,
yeah.
you know, cutting an avocado, looking out the window, I mean, they're there every moment. But they're so habitual, I hadn't really noticed and put my attention that this is a joyful moment. Firstly, I'm seeing. I have eyes that are seeing and ears that are hearing.
Yes.
And so it's just kind of switching the paradigm and beginning to really notice almost every moment can be made into something elevating.
Nice. I love that. Thanks for sharing that, Marcia. Great. No, which actually, you know, reminds me, we don't usually check in to give a report of how last month's Shita practice, you know, the weekly practices went. So I really appreciate you checking in and sharing that. And actually, I think this is a perfect time to open to what else you noticed. I have another one for this month, which I will copy and give you for practices for tranquility going forward this month. But if there's anything that really jumped out at you practicing, would be lovely if you would like to share, if you practice with them. I did put them by my bathroom mirror, as Daryl had brought up, so that was great. Could see it every day. So if you want to share any reports, this is a great time. If not, I'll move on. Okay, all right, I'll move on. We'll let your report stand, Marcia, because my feeling was the same as yours. I loved the practices last month with joy. Just so many moments of joy. And I also liked the practice that week. What I assign, I do myself. So I walk my talk, which was doing things that would bring you, inclining the mind towards doing more activity that bring you joy. That was a fun one too, that week. So, moving on. So with tranquility, I wanted to share a couple of things with you. One is that in the Visuddhimagga, which is the path of purification, translated as the path of purification book, which is the compendium. Oh shoot! I totally forgot to record. Hit record. It's never too late. Or maybe I did hit record. This has been acting very strange. Could you check, Bev, see if it's, or someone, would you check the, this morning I hit the record, but it, do you see if it says record or no? I was having an issue. I think I did hit record. Actually, it is recording. Never mind. It is recording. It was having something. I think we're good. It was having an issue earlier this morning, which I solved. Never mind. Thank you for checking. Okay, we're good. Whew. Okay. All right. So, what's that? I think we are recording. Yeah, we are recording. So in the path of purification, which is a compendium of post-canonical commentaries, it's like more than a thousand pages. So, which is great read. But two types of pasadi, two types of tranquility are described. So I'd like to share them with you so that it supports your practice. One is kaya pasadi, and the other one is chitta pasadi, and I'll get to them. So kaya is the word for body. Remember kayagatasati, mindfulness of the body. Kaya, the word body. So kaya pasadi, tranquility of the body. And then chitta pasadi, chitta, mind, tranquility of mind. So this teaching is interpreted in two different ways by scholars, and I'll give you both of those ways so that you can work with them. One is kind of taking kaya literally, taking that, tranquility of the body, and then a tranquility of the mind, when the mind is peaceful and settled, and how one supports the other. How in your mind, for example, if you're feeling agitated, if you could sit and have a sense of calm and peace and stability in the body, how that could support the calm and tranquility of the mind. Or when your mind is really tranquil and calm, your body sometimes slows down. Like I was noticing when I went outside to walk, my body didn't want to walk fast. It just wanted to really walk slowly. It was just like, and I noticed, there's a lot of calm in my mind. My body wants to kind of move very measured, taking very measured steps. So one supporting the other. So the good news, the lovely news with this interpretation is that you can support pasadi in the mind, calm and peacefulness in the mind, by bringing it into the body. So instead of like fidgeting and moving every 5 seconds, if you could have a calm physical presence that can support it, support the mind. So, and I'll give an example of this a little earlier, but first I want to give you the other interpretation. So the other interpretation is to consider the factor of pasadi, the factor of tranquility, just as a mind factor, just as a mental factor. So chitta pasadi, would refer to the calmness, tranquility of consciousness, of the perception of citta itself. Citta is translated as consciousness also, not just mind. There are different ways to translate it. And then body, kaya, would refer to the mental factors that support consciousness. So mental factors being perception, so many mental factors. Let me see. Averting of the attention, for example, vedana, feeling tone, sanya, I already mentioned, sanya is perception, pasa is contact. So all of the things, all of the mental factors in the realm of visuddhimagga, in the realm of path of purification. So everything else that supports consciousness, supports knowing. So calmness of all of those, peacefulness of all of those. Does that make sense? Okay, let me say a little more about that. So basically, if you think of the kind of like perception being kind of steady, or it's actually consciousness of like this, the sense of the knowing, the faculty of knowing. Let's actually use the faculty of knowing as synonymous for consciousness. So if the faculty of knowing is pretty steady and calm, and then all the mental factors that support it, that help it, all those are all calm and steady. So that's another way to interpret this, which becomes more of a mental factor. I have to say, personally, I prefer the other interpretation of the mind and body. I think that can be more supportive for practitioners. But I just want to share the second one because it's in, just to be thorough. That's that. So, but really, I think for practice, the first one, the first interpretation is much more, for our practice. I mean, there are some practices with Visuddhimagga and all that I've practiced, and this second interpretation can be helpful too, but not right now. It can be a little more confusing, but maybe just forget it. Anyway, all right, okay. Any questions? Okay. So with that, now I want to give you an example. Actually, I want to give you an example and also another theme that I would like to introduce, which is, this sense of calm, pasadi, tranquility, it can be, as we practice it, as we train ourselves in it, it can be accessible anywhere. Even in places that are least comfortable for us. I'd like to share a little story. So when I was teaching the seven factors at IMC, the programs a couple years ago, during the month where the practice, the theme was tranquility. One day I went to have my blood drawn for lots of tests, blood tests. And I don't know about you, but having my blood drawn is right up there with going to the dentist for me. It's not one of my favorite things to do, especially when it stings. You know, there's a needle in my vein and it's stinging and I'm looking at all the vials that still need to be filled and I'm thinking, oh my goodness, are we done yet? Like I'm just sitting there. So I was sitting there kind of like feeling the sting, just wondering like, oh, ouch. Also sometimes my mind goes to worrying about whether, it can happen that there's bruising happening and all that, the bleeding under the skin and all that. Anyway, so I'm sitting there feeling the sting, worrying. And then I remember, the theme of this month is tranquility, peace. Can I have really, because my mind was agitated, obviously, as I'm describing to you. It's like, when are we done? Are we there yet? I thought, oh, okay. Is it possible in one of my least favorite places, can there be access to peace, to tranquility? Like, so I thought, okay, here's a challenge. Let's see how this goes. So first I thought, what came up for me was, ah, okay, well, I'm sitting still. I can't move, really. This is good. I can't move right now. So by definition, I had tranquility. You know, there was tranquility or a place to start with tranquility of the body, with lack of movement. Like, and then when I brought my attention to it, ah, actually, my body could be tranquil, could be peaceful, could let go of this kind of tightness because I was bracing myself for what was going to happen. Actually, you know, I can let go. I can be completely peaceful, the body. And then right away, that gave rise to the tranquility of mind, which, I mean, they're both dependent on each other, related. And there was a sense of peace and ease, and this access to this lake I was sharing with you this morning was just like a sense of complete peace and ease. And I was just happy and completely calm and peaceful sitting there. And in that moment, I couldn't care less about the stinging or how many more vials there were left. And for me, that was an interesting moment of practice. Like, wow, this is interesting. This is fun. Like, here it is. 2 minutes ago, agitation. Here, within seconds, here there's this access to really this placid, infinite lake of tranquility and peace and calm. And whenever those moments like that come up for me, I get so joyous and excited about this practice because I keep exploring and discovering and learning and finding ways that this practice just surprises me. Just, I mean, in some ways I know in my head that it can be accessible anywhere, but just to know it, to really experience it, to really know it in your bones, like holy cow, what just happened? This is miraculous. This is wonderful. What a difference a few seconds can make or turn in the mind. So I share this with you because it's just practice. I wasn't like this, you know, a couple of decades ago. I would have just been, you know, jumping jacks in my mind, doing jump, about like, was this going to be over? So practice. It could make all the difference. And it can be accessible to you anywhere. And in fact, this calm, this feeling of calm and tranquility is supportive, can be supportive for the other factors of equanimity, for example, in a way to hold the difficulty of the world, in the world, in your life, and in the world when things come up, that there is this sense of peace and calm that can support, that again, not to be aloof, and again, we'll talk a lot more about this in tranquility, in equanimity, so I'll hold that, but there's this capacity of calm and peace that can be nurtured and then become more and more available. So, so any questions before I continue and share a couple more things with you? Yes. Maybe this side of the room should have its own. That side of the room should have its... Great, thank you for grabbing that. Great, okay.
This isn't a question, but it's just an affirmation of your story in that with my young grandchildren, you know, that either they're so tight and wound up at bedtime. And then, and I don't consider myself an extremely calm person, but when I have to sit in the chair with them and rock them, and they know intuitively your energy. Mm. And so that I'm able to access a very, you know, much slower, it's nighttime now, you know, you're safe. It's good to sleep. that I'm able to go into that space for myself.
Nice.
Is it reassure, you know, it's like what you're saying, that it is there.
It is there.
And yeah. It is there in a minute.
Yes.
In a second.
Yeah.
So thank you for helping me notice that.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Thanks for sharing that, it is there. We know it's there. And let's turn our minds, let's practice so that we can turn our minds more easily towards it, just as you're doing with your grandchildren. And
yeah.
This motivation, beautiful. Beautiful.
Yeah, it's just accessible.
Yeah, exactly. And that gives not just hope, but delight. It's great. Being human has its challenges and all these things that you can discover about what's available there.
What's available,
yeah.
What's in the toolkit.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. Yeah, actually you can keep that there because that's like, wait, they have their own mic now.
Okay.
Great.
I also just note.
Oh, I think number four needs to be bumped up. So number three is up, four isn't, so. Check it out.
Is this working? Yeah.
It's working great.
Not too much. I just noticed also that I like sitting, my body's just enjoys the posture and just... Mm-hmm. And when I sit during my meditation in the mornings, I always like... how my body relaxes and sits quietly and just... But I always end up focusing on my mind and how not settled it is.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
To the point that most of the time I lose my body's calmness too. And I think if I just maybe noticed more and stayed more with the calmness and the pleasantness of the body.
Great.
Maybe that
great
will be helpful.
Great. Terrific. That's fantastic. And that is really bringing in mindfulness of the body, kaya gatasati. And mindfulness of the body is really the basis for the mind settling and calming. So that's great. Bring more attention. Incline your awareness to the body, to the stillness, to the delight of, I'm actually quite happy sitting here, not moving. This is great. Lovely. I'm delighted to hear that. Please report back. Tell me how it goes next time. That's great. Lovely. Okay. So, let's see. What do I want to share? So, I want to share now something from the Satipatthana Sutta, which I mentioned, where in the fourth section of it, the section for Dhammas, or translated as, differently, sometimes translated as mental objects, or mind objects, talks about how to work with the seven factors and how to work with many other things, but we'll just focus on the seven factors. So I'll read for you the practice here from the Satipatthana Sutta, and then I'll expand it a little bit. In fact, I'll read the paragraph for tranquility specifically. Okay. So... if the tranquility awakening factor is present in them, they know there is tranquility factor, awakening factor in me. If the tranquility awakening factor is not present in them, they know there is no tranquility awakening factor in me. They know how the unarisen tranquility awakening factor can arise and how the arisen tranquility awakening factor can be perfected by development. So in this four, in this brief paragraph, we heard four different instructions, four different ways of practicing with the factor of tranquility. So we've been doing that, but let me break it down. So the first is, when tranquility, let's just say when calm is present, you know there is calm present, right? So basically bringing mindfulness and knowing when something, when it's present. Oh yeah, there is calm present right now. That's one part, that's one way of practicing with it. Oh yeah, there is calm. It's really getting to know it, what it feels like, what it tastes like, what it's like. That one, that it's present, so knowing that it's present. Actually, let me just simplify it. Actually, so the first thing is just knowing that it's present. Simple. It's present. Yeah? There's calm present right now. In fact, let's check in. Is there calm present right now? Is there tranquility, pasadi present right now? Okay. That's instruction number one. Then the paragraph continues. If pasadi is not present, they know there is no pasadi present. Okay? So, again, bringing awareness. So checking, is there calm? Is there not calm? You know, if you happen to be really agitated, wow, there is no calm right now. Interesting. So knowing that it's not present. So basically this is an instruction of not just noticing when it's present, but also noticing when it's not present. Like you're going about your day, you're running late, you're about, you know, I don't know, you're in the grocery store, you're like rushing around with your cart, like you're zooming in front of the other person before they get to the checkout counter. Ah. Is tranquility, calm, is it not present? Yep, it is not present right now. There's a lot of agitation present. Or with me sitting in the chair waiting for my blood to be drawn. Yep, it's true. Calm is not present right now. So knowing whether it's present or not present, just as important. Just as important to check in when things are not present. Not only when they're present, but especially when they're not present, right? Because when they're not present, as we discussed earlier, we know they're accessible, they're there. So can we turn our mind to them in those moments where they're not present? Do you see how profound this instruction is? It's not just noticing them when they're present, which is wonderful and fantastic, because then that leads to the other instructions, both when they're present and they're not present. Okay? So now I'll move to the next couple of instructions in this paragraph. So they know how the unarisen tranquility awakening factor can arise. Ah, this is interesting. So basically, it's not here, but oh, I know how it can be arisen, right? So knowing how an unarisen, it's not present, it's how an unarisen pasadi can arise. Knowing the path, your mind kind of knowing how to get there, right? It may be telling your grandchildren, it's night now, let's go to sleep, right? You know how to get there. Or it might be for me sitting like, oh, okay, my body is calm, oh, okay. Kind of the mind knowing how to get there. So that's part of the training. That's part of the training also, knowing how to get there, okay? How the unarisen factor can arise, okay? That's the third instruction. Now the fourth instruction. How the arisen tranquility awakening factor can be perfected by development. That, I love this last one. How the arisen tranquility awakening factor can be perfected by development. Okay. So this is where So the very first instruction, we're just checking, is it present? Yep. Or nope, right, yes, no. But now, the second one, the third and fourth instruction are more detailed. The third is, it's not here. How can I make it arise? Right? It's a little more, there's more training in the mind. Now the fourth one, it's here. It's already arisen. Oh, yeah, it's present. Okay, how can it be cultivated and deepened and become richer? Okay? All right. So that, what supports, and we'll spend time this afternoon with that, as we've spent this morning with the fourth one, as you really start to continue to get to know it more, rest in it, like really rest in the tranquility and the calm, and really get to understand its cartography, what it's like, how does it feel like. It gets more and more developed. It gets deeper and deeper. It gets spread. So really spending time with it, not just checking out in it, but both resting in it and kind of bringing some curiosity, a little bit of investigation, light investigation to it, bringing some of the second factor, Dhamma Vicaya, bringing it to this fifth factor, exploring with some curiosity. So those are four instructions to keep in mind as we practice today and as you take this practice home. So the four instructions were, okay, first one, is it present? Good. Second one, is it not present? Good. Third one. There you go. If it's not here, if it's not arisen, exactly. How do you make it arise? Exactly. And the fourth one?
If it's present, how do you perfect it?
Yes. If it's here, how do you perfect it? Yeah. Great. So that covers different aspects. So keep that in mind. And then from the commentaries, I wanted to share with you some... These are thought to be supportive conditions for developing the various awakening factors. These are pulled from various commentarial surveys. And this is from the book by Bhikkhu Anālayo, Satipatthana, The Direct Path to Awakening, I think is the subtitle. So for tranquility, for pasadi, here are the supportive factors from the commentaries. What supports calm? Good food. It's getting towards lunchtime. Good food. Agreeable weather. This is a pretty good day for pasadi, I say. Sun in California. Comfortable posture. That also supports pasadi. Balanced behavior. That can have many dimensions, balanced behavior, right? It can be balanced behavior internally, it can be externally, right? Behavior towards ourselves, how we're behaving, and like, are we running around like a headless chicken, or how are we behaving towards others, right? So, and also that can potentially bring in the aspect of sila, the aspect of ethics, right? Our behavior, if it doesn't have the ethical ramifications considerations, it can lead to lack of calm internally, right? So it's interesting how these are all kind of can be connected to each other. So okay, so good food, agreeable weather, comfortable posture, balanced behavior. Oh, this is a good one. Avoiding restless people and associating with calm people. This is a good day. We're hanging out with each other. Cultivating pasadi. Yes. And the last one is inclining the mind accordingly, which is what we've been doing this whole day. Inclining the mind towards calm and peace and ease. So any questions about what I have shared right so far about prasadi, tranquility, calm? Please. And the mic is right by your foot.
I didn't... why did you share with us... Why did you share with us the part about calmness of the body and calmness of the mind?
Yes.
I mean, I didn't get a takeaway from that. I felt like it was...
The first interpretation or the second interpretation?
The first interpretation.
Oh.
I felt I didn't get it. Like, oh, I feel like there it was just...
There's something there. What's the point of this? Okay, great, great. I'm glad you asked the question. So the reason why I shared that is that in my practice, and actually I can do maybe a guided meditation with this, but what I found supportive in my own practice is to have, you know, how earlier, how I've been talking about bringing more investigation, right, to the cartography, the landscape, the edges, the valleys, like what is this calmness quality, what does it feel like in the body? What does it feel like in the mind? So making that distinction actually can allow a little more resolution, right? What does it feel like in the body? Actually, my body feels kind of heavy, kind of feels like relaxed. So my mind is unperturbable, happy. It's like there might not even be words that you can put on them, but there could be like qualitatively you start to see that there's some differences between like how experience in the body and experience in the mind. And then based on that, so that was one reason for sharing that teaching. The other reason is that sometimes it might be more available to you to start with calm in the body. And that supports the calm in the mind. Hence I gave the example that I was sitting, I couldn't move on the, you know, having my blood drawn. Right, the body was still, and turning the mind gave rise to both body and mind being calm, okay? It can also be the other way around, where if you're really feeling calm, you'll notice there's a sense of the body doesn't want to move too fast, right? And I gave the example that when I went out, I just wanted to walk slowly, even though I would have liked to walk fast. It was pretty cold, but body didn't want to. It was like, we're walking slowly. That's what it feels like. There's, you know, the mind has a lot of prasadi and the body kind of has that sense of tranquility and ease. So the two can lead to each, and it's helpful, really helpful to see the distinction and how they affect each other and support each other.
That's great. Thank you.
You're welcome. Great. Any other questions or reflections? Okay. This is great. It's 12:29. By the time I finish the sentence, it'll be 12:30, which will be perfect time for us to have a peaceful lunch. So for lunch, you can eat lunch in silence if you're drawn. If you feel like talking with others, that's okay too. You have that option. And I ask you to always check, for today especially, because we are in a kind of a more calm place, so you may want to stay in that and explore that. Like, what is it to stay in a calm place and eat from that state of calm and then go for a walk? So if you want to do that, please respect that. And if you want to talk, please check in, ask the person, like, do you want to stay in silence or do you want to talk? Just have a contract. Or it could be that maybe you'll talk for 10 minutes or have lunch together and then, or 15 or whatever, however long you decide, and then you go into silence. So I just want to invite you to explore that and see what feels right to you today, okay? And during the lunchtime, if you do decide to have your lunch in silence, again, keep exploring calm. Like, how does it feel in the body, in the mind, in eating? If you do decide to engage in conversation, I suggest that you still keep the balance, keep the center of gravity low, if you can, in your body, not in your head. When you're talking, it's kind of normal, you know, to get go into our heads. But see if you can keep the center of gravity low. And in fact, experiment with slowing down your speech. Just play with it. They'll understand. If you're talking, slow down your speech a lot and see how that actually helps with your mind and your body. So again, that's interesting, because slowing down your speech is kaya, is physical. See how that affects your mind, how that calms your mind when you speak more slowly, right? Check it out. Okay, so let's come back at 1:31, okay, and enjoy your lunch.
I'll be late, but I'm still coming back.
Okay.